Dr. Werner Deutsch is with the Commission for Sound Research, a sister organization of the Academy of Science in Vienna. He recently spoke at the 1983 Washington Conference of IASA. Dr. Deutsch is specialized in the enhancement of historic sound recordings using new digital processing. Having said that, I have to say that Dr. Deutsch cannot be with us today, and at the last minute was unable to come from Vienna and has chosen the resonant vocal cords of Franz Lechleitner to present his paper for him.
Thank you. The purpose of this paper is to present a slightly different approach to the common use of digital signal processing applied to the enhancement of historical sound recordings. It is our opinion that the restoration of historical recordings must take into account human perception in general and psychoacoustics particularly, because the listeners are motivated by perceptual and cognitive considerations rather than relying on mathematics models. Starting out from the main objective to improve the overall quality of the sound recordings, three kinds of severe signals degradations have to be considered in detail. First, transient peaks caused by dirt or damage, scratches and cracks on the original discs or wax cylinders. Second, background hiss and broadband noise due to imperfections of recording surfaces of the material used. Third, unnatural sounding caused by resonances which were present in the historical recording equipment. Now to the signal enhancement procedures. It has been pointed out by several investigators in the speech research, the James S. Slim, for a comprehensive overview, that appropriate signal processing algorithms can be applied to eliminate signal degradations as mentioned above. Though computational and technical problems of efficient signal enhancement algorithms are still valid, the power of modern computer technology and software development has reduced them significantly. If transient peaks can be detected, they are removed by replacing the degradation signal by undistorted material prior or after the peak, or by simply removing short peaks. Perceptually, a smooth jump in phase or a small gap in the sound is far less offensive than sharp click or pop. The detection of sharp peaks can be done by computer programs, but usually considerable variations of the click waveforms have to be taken in account, varying from recording to recording depending on the kind of damage of the recording medium. Background hiss and continuous broadband noise can be reduced significantly by applying highly sophisticated adaptive filter techniques. These degradations are most prominent, especially in very early recordings, which have been made under non-ideal recording conditions, as in the free field with irregular climate conditions, temperature and rain, and without the availability of properly maintained studio equipment. In many cases, the original recordings have been lost, and today only poor copies or matrices of poor quality are available. Nevertheless, if the statistical characteristics of the signal and the background noise can be identified, adaptive filtering techniques can be applied with good chances of success. Last but not least, the compensation for unpleasant horn and system resonances can be done by carefully equalizing the recordings with higher resolution digital filters. Practically, no technical limitations exist in frequency resolution or filter bandwidth. The problems still arise if no reliable guess of system transfer functions can be obtained, because little or no information about historical recording equipment are available. There are extensive discussions how to measure horn and system resonances in combination with the recording medium used. In many cases, the system transfer functions have to be extracted from silent periods of the recordings, a method which relies not directly on the physics of the recording equipment. There is some further experience which led us to proceed with caution, because slight ill condition of equalizations inevitably causes significant deterioration of the whole enhancement process. Certainly, it is better to do no equalization instead of introducing a wrong. The listener's habits in hearing historical sound materials are characterized by the experience that old recordings sound hollow and dull, that his broadband background noise and cracks are present. The frequency range is very limited and the signal to noise ratio is low. Even 78s produce usually more or less acceptable amount of hiss representing a historical document. Modern digital stereo records have a frequency range of virtually 20 kHz and a full dynamic range of more than 80 dB. In addition to the program signal, they preserve the room characteristics of the recording studio, and in live performances, the acoustical environments as accurate as possible, due to highly sophisticated multi-channel recording techniques and stereo mixing. Let's imagine a simple psychoacoustical experiment. First, we mix continuous background pink noise with a modern recording in order to simulate the signal-to-noise ratio of historical recordings, for example, 15 to 20 dB. Then we feed this artificially degraded signal into the noise reduction system, and the result will be a clean, high-fidelity recording with a signal-to-noise ratio almost original. If we apply the same amount of noise reduction to a historical recording, we will never obtain a higher frequency range as originally had, and expanding the signal-to-noise ratio of the poor original recording to the value of a modern record, which is technically possible, will produce a strange, unusual sound. It will be clean, completely free of noise, but the dynamic relationships are not correct. Moreover, the problem of the limited frequency range of historical recordings, typically 200 to 4,000 hertz, will increase to intolerable prominence in the total absence of any high frequency components. This leads to the conclusion that it is undesirable to produce a figure without any background, an experience which is widely documented in the perception of visual informations and which is valid in audition too. Frequently, it happens that a continuously sounding weak and neutral background is plausible and better than none. Thus, the main objective to improve the overall quality of the sound recordings in case of hiss and background noise can be formulated more exactly from the psychoacoustic point of view. The primary signal has to be enhanced reasonably, and the uncorrelated background noise has to be reduced to a certain amount in order to instill almost natural sound background conditions. Now, we have some tape examples. The following tape demonstration contains four examples of signal enhancement. The original soundtrack is followed by the recording after signal processing. To the examples, I have to say some words. There is a background noise which is changing with the recording speed. We presume that it's to the effect that the two sides of the single-sided record are not really matched by the molding process. It seems to be like a warped record playing back. And this effect is has to be very carefully pointed out and enhanced, because during the processing it is very pronounced. The first recording is a free field recording of a flute play from the New Guinea, made by Rudolf Pech in 1905. Phonogram number 535. It's a vertical cut, 7-inch record. Original soundtrack. Not a processed recording. You can imagine the background noise changing with the speed. The next one is a song from Jofar. It's, I think, Oman, Arabian, recorded 1904. The next example is from Hector Levinsky, recorded in 1901.
Okay. für das Rätselstaben oder Heilung der Verbesserungen in der Öffnung. Doch alles, die Hörer ja der Rätselungen, die Wunderkraft zu machen und Gott den Menschen anzunehmen, das ist ein Teil, denn die anderen Dinge werden noch erzielt.
And the last item is Gustav Walter, Lohengrin, the entrance, 1906. Especially in the last case, we refrain from eliminating hiss and broadband noise completely and consequently a continuous background with an acceptable level can be heard during silent periods of weak signal. This background is composed of several low frequency signals, but only the rumble and of the turntable can be distinguished clearly. During strong signals, in the original recording, we used the well-known psychoacoustical masking effect, which increases the subjective hearing threshold of a second tone in presence of a strong primary tone. For example, whenever strong spectral components of a singer are present, they mask high frequency noise up to a certain range themselves, exactly within one critical band. This resulted in a relevant reduction of overall processing necessary, and many signal portions are left almost original. However, the noise cannot be heard due to the psychoacoustic masking effect. Continuous fine-tuning of the parameters of the adaptive filtering algorithm has to be done, including the application of frequency and amplitude-dependent rules, to obtain maximum noise reduction when it is necessary from the psychoacoustical point of view and to suppress it otherwise without producing the well-known pumping effects. Thank you very much.
Dirks, may I ask a question?
Yes.
First of all, your information is fascinating. But I would like to know one thing. The original recordings, were those flat discs?
Yes, they were not, yes, flat disc, yes.
And, what kind of a reproduction, when you originally played them, for the original recordings we had, what kind of a apparatus did you use? An old-time machine, or did you use the modern machines of today?
Modern machine.
Modern machines today.
Yes, yes.
Now, on the very, very first one, and I've listened to a lot of recordings, I thought I heard the rumble of a cylinder.
No, it's no cylinder.
Master. A cylinder master
no,
transferred to
no.
the disc. Like the Pathé system you said.
No, it's no cylinder. Because I know these recordings. I have to do with them and in our archive, we are not collecting cylinders and commercial material. These recordings are flat discs in the vertical cut disc with the Edison stylus. Yes? I think with what about 1 millimeter? No. The cutting stylus has 1 millimeter diameter. It's 4 mil. Yes. Yes.
The reason I mentioned this, of course, I didn't wish
yes.
to, your addition is above everything. The reason I mentioned this is that I've had the opportunity to play countless perfect records, or Pathé records in America here.
Yes.
And which were developed from a master cylinder. And I
yes,
same,
of course.
Same Pathé, kind of rumble that you
no,
have
yeah,
record.
Yes. No. The rumble. You can imagine the frequency of the rumble frequency is correlated to the speed, and we have a speed of between 50 or 70 APM.
No attempts were made to play it on original machines of the day, right?
No, we have the original machines.
Yeah.
But it's horrible.
Yeah.
Because you have a background noise which is much more pronounced.
Thank you.
Did you transfer those first to tape?
Yes.
Because I keep hearing the print through the third from the end.
Ah, no. Last record?
No. From the end.
Yes, of course. We didn't. But there is a certain amount of print in the last record, which is originally at the record. Yes. Yes, Lloyd?
Were there any attempt made to film the rumble before the processing? Because that
seemed to me that Dr. Deutsch didn't like to get filtered copies. He thought we shall do a flat copy, and he makes the processing afterwards.
Yeah, I just wondered if it would be interesting to hear the difference between the filtered version, including the rumble,
yes.
and a version that's gone through the same process, but with the rumble analog filtered beforehand.
Yes, yes.
See what the difference is after.
Yeah. In some cases we did analog filtering before, yes.
Non-technical question. The last two items,
yes.
Those were non-commercial recordings?
All the items are non-commercial recordings.
Do you know how those two, the actor and the singer, how those recordings came to be made? Is there any history behind them?
Pardon?
How did it happen that Walter and
they had the
who made
the head of the archive had a close connection to the court, and they at first intended to record all the famous people, mm-hmm. but soon afterwards they stopped it.
So it was an archival project.
Yes, yes. Perhaps.
You opened up a whole new business.
Well, I'm just going to give my impressions on what I was hearing. I have the feeling that
the wavering of the sound that Dr. Deutsch has produced,
yes,
is very similar to the wavering that Noyce Sigel's machines have produced, although the algorithms must obviously be different.
I don't believe that the algorithms are so different, because the adaptive filtering is a process which is widely known.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, what it is a replacement of a noise pulse or extrapolation or interpolation, whatever, will, in a singing voice, create things which are not very good. Maybe raster cycle will be broken, for instance, and reconstituted in a different case. That may create
perhaps
the
could be.
The singer's format, which would be around 2.8 kilohertz,
yes,
was reproduced in the correct version.
Yes.
It was changing the amplitude in a way in which we would never do the singing. That's the whole range between 2.5 and 3 kilohertz, 3.2 kilohertz.
Yes.
The range which the singer uses to project.
Yes.
And in a good singer, that is something that the ear, which is most sensible in that area, will latch onto, even through an orchestral accompaniment.
Mm.
And,
yes, I understand.
Therefore, the ear is very sensitive to changes in that which are not related to the music otherwise.
I will tell him.
Yes.
I think we better cut.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.